It's the Tiltcast, episode 597. Child labor is necessary?
And this week, guys, we talk Star Trekker, Space Marine 2, Satisfactory, and Frostpunk 2. Stay tuned.
Send them to the mines. The children were born for the mines.
I got you. I got you.
It's the Tiltcast.
What?
Yeah. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
I am Rusty.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a weekend.
It be a weekend. The 22nd, it's 64 degrees outside and rainy as fuck, which we need the rain up here, so that's great.
It is not yet that here. In fact, I don't know what the heat index was yesterday, but it was 98 degrees in the middle of the day yesterday here.
I'm so glad I don't live in fucking, in the south anymore.
It's about 85 now, feels like 90, and in about 3 hours, it's going to drop dramatically.
Yeah. It's supposed to drop 60s. Into the 50s.
That sounds wonderful, actually. 50s? Oh, man.
I was in a rush. You guys, I was like, when are we doing the podcast today? And you're like, I can be ready in 30 minutes. I was like, fuck. I got to jump in the pool and drain it before it gets too fucking cold. Okay. And so I suited up and jumped in that pool and pulled the drain plug. It is still draining, I think. Yeah.
Well, your lawn will be watered.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Oof. It's draining really fast.
See?
Because I knew that after the podcast, it would be fucking cold. Like, you're supposed to get, 30-mile-an-hour winds and rain as it rapidly shifts temperature. It's because, the first day of fall is, tomorrow? Or is that today?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I really don't. It's going to be just a thing.
It's today.
Siri. What?
It's when today. So that's how today? Oklahoma does it. It's like, it was summer yesterday. Better turn to fall immediately.
That's basically what's happening up here. Honestly, it was 85 degrees yesterday. Hot and dry and shitty because it's not supposed to be that up here at this particular time of year. Please cool down. It should be 70s right now. And then today it's just rainy, overcast and friggin' 64 degrees during the middle of the day, which is, it's basically what what we're supposed to be getting. So first day of fall on point. I'm ready for hoodie weather, man. That's it.
Yeah. Well, now we're supposed to be in 50s for lows and mid to upper 70s for highs for the next couple weeks. So we're going to relish that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks. And then it goes back up to 90.
I mean, it is Oklahoma. That's totally possible. There are two truths in Oklahoma. Either it will be absolutely freaking, almost unsafe to take your children out freezing for Halloween, or you are going to absolutely bake in whatever costume you choose.
It always snows on Halloween here. Always without fail within for the last couple of years, at least it snowed on Halloween, even if it was just a light dusting. It just That's just the way, you know, that's the way the North is. Your Batman is also wearing a freaking snowsuit. You know? I don't know. I don't necessarily like the snow portion of it. I do like, you know, I do prefer cooler. Like, I don't mind it being, you know, cool up here. And I really like fall. Like, I really do. Like, the fall colors are starting to pop up. And that's a thing that Oklahoma just doesn't have. You know, when fall happens in Oklahoma, it just turns brown and dies. There's no color. Up here, it's beautiful. Like, you know, you see the whole forest in different colors of orange and yellow and red. It's a thing, man. It's one of the things that I love about it, the up north. But, you know, what the hell have we been doing over the last week or so?
Not a whole ton.
Yeah.
I've actually had kind of a tough week to sit down and game. Most days I've gotten home and just want to sink into my chair and do nothing. So I've played a few more hours of Star Trekker. That is still relaxing as hell. But more days than not, I just couldn't even bring myself to get to my computer to even load that.
Yeah, but now you've got something that, you know, that's improved your whole computing experience, didn't you?
I mean, I did. Yeah. So yesterday I went through the entire 4-hour install process for Fiber.
Oh.
Yay.
Yeah, it takes a long ass time, but Fiber though. What'd you get?
Dude. So, long story short, AT&T has been installing Fiber around me for like the last 5 years. Like literally every neighborhood around our neighborhood has gotten it before now. So it finally became available for our neighborhood. So, ordered that as soon as it became available to get that installed. Cause as good and reliable as Cox has been for the most part, there's two major downsides to it. One, I was paying nearly $100 for between 200 and 300 megabits a second download. And they have this terabyte data cap monthly usage, which most of the time isn't a problem, but we generally have to, you know, because pretty much everybody in the house now games at this point, with the family gaming online more often than not, because they all play Fortnite and Roblox and The Division together. There's been months where we've gone over that data cap quite frequently in the last.
Well, you always talk about your data caps, and then I'm putting you on my usage, which is mine alone, right? Versus you and three kids and your wife, right?
Yeah.
And I can see how you go. So now do you just not have a cap?
Now we just have no cap.
So you just use internet?
Not only is AT&T saving me over $30 a month, I get gigabit download and upload. Thank you, Fiber. It literally took me all of 2 minutes to upload our newest YouTube video versus 45 minutes because my upload speed was freaking horrible.
And if you don't make it to the end of the show very, very regularly, because it is a fairly long show, where is that YouTube video hosted at, Jason?
YouTube.com/@tiltcast.com/shorts. We've started uploading on a regular schedule there.
Because Jason's kind of a dork. It's shorts with a Z.
Yes, it is. I didn't want the algorithm trying to link it to YouTube shorts, because we're not doing 30-second videos, right? These are just clips out of our episodes that range between 5 and 20 minutes. So, I didn't want the YouTube algorithm gods, giving us an even worse chance by mixing it with their shorts content, or trying to. That said, it was taking me, on average, nearly an hour total to both upload a regular full-on podcast episode for Justin to put on the site, but also these videos, because my upload was limited to like 50 gigabits a second. And you know, when you're on broadband, you're not getting all of that all the time, right?
Mm, well,
so
that's boxes for you right there,
I mean, right?
You're gonna have a bunch of download channels.
I had a lot of
like one or two upload
channels. I had a lot of issues with it. When you
think about it, is amazing, because it wasn't. Well, I guess it was a long time ago now, but I remember us singing Doxus 3 praises like 10, 15 years ago, right?
Well,
but that's how far we've come. Well, so now I have fiber, and all of that stuff was nearly instantaneous. The entire YouTube upload process, which anybody who's ever done that before, would know, it consists not only of uploading your video, but then it also streams the video at the same time to check it for any licensed content, that might be in violation, et cetera, et cetera. Luckily, Let's Plays don't fall under that, and that's virtually what our short videos are. It's clips out of this podcast, plus the some gameplay video. That upload takes longer because YouTube's also stream previewing it for any violations, right? Well, instead of it taking 35 to 45 minutes to do that, because my upload speed sucked, it took all of 4 minutes today. That's a huge time saver for me.
You were talking about the gigabit internet. Yeah. I had the worst luck with that. So it was supposed to be, I'm like, the box is behind my fence, right? But I could never get over 640 megabits per second on that thing. And I was spending like what's like $20 or $30 more than the next tier down, right? It was super inconsistent. Sometimes it dropped to 200 and 300. Sometimes it jumped up to like 640. And I was like, man, this is so irregular. I'm just going to downgrade one tier. And the one tier is very consistent. And it's sometimes up to the same speed, but it's never lower than, you know, half a gig down, like ever.
Yeah.
And it uploads at 100 up, so it's decently fast. And I haven't had a recent upgrade. I don't really struggle too much with downloading. I mean, I download a fair amount, right, but in chunks. And I don't have anybody else use my internet but me, so there you go, you know.
Right. You didn't have to worry about that, but, you know. But the biggest issue for us was the data cap, right? Because Cox charges you like $50 for every 10 gigs you go over. or something like that.
Yeah, and then if you are out of bandwidth because everybody's been watching Netflix in the house, then you're like, well, I guess I'm not downloading any games.
Exactly. So if all of, so if I downloaded one game and Fortnite decided to do an update, larger than a couple hundred megabytes, right? And everybody ends up having to update Fortnite, which happens every couple months, then we're easily over just from that. So, you know, it was starting to take us a lot of management to not go over data cap consistently. So this, now not having a data cap, thank you, AT&T, it's like the one good thing you're still doing for us lay people. We won't have to worry about that anymore. And on top of that, it took me all of 3 minutes to download and install Age of Empires yesterday, or Age of Mythology yesterday. I mean, that's not a very big game. It's 25 gigs. But that was still something that would have taken me like half an hour on my old service. So, you know, I will take all the wins. That said, I've not played it yet, so I won't go into it any more than that. But I did play several more hours of Star Trekker, and I just can't find anything wrong with that game. It's got a learning curve, and resource management can with your batteries and your oxygen filters can get kind of hairy sometimes. But for the most part, it's just a really chill point-to-point game. You know, you're just selecting the right contracts. And I did learn early on, you can get yourself in trouble by, not paying attention to total estimated travel time when you go select contracts.
Yeah. Cause you can get so late, you don't make anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoot. They can even throw you in the negative, like, because the contract will stay available up until the very last second. So you can buy it because it's still available, thinking, oh yeah, I could just go complete this right now, and then, you know, you get like a gate jump or two in, and then all of a sudden, boom, you violated the contract, blah, blah, blah. And then you get stuck with this cargo and a bunch of essentially fines from your failed contract and end up in the negative. But it's just, for the most part, when you're selecting the right contracts and you're just going from one point to another, it's like, it's just chill gaming at its finest, I think.
Hmm.
Hmm. Well, okay then.
Yeah. I haven't actually, you know, touched it yet. So, been doing other things, you know. Let's see. What was I doing? Well, update on the whole thingamabob. I am meeting with, you know, with the people who are gonna medically gut me here in a couple days. So I'll know more about what the time frame is and whatnot. But I'm kind of looking forward to all this. I look at it as like the it's my opportunity to transform. I kind of need that. So yeah, if you're just tuning in, I'm looking to go through bariatrics. So it's a been a long fucking time coming, and I need this to happen. So looking forward to it, trying to stay as healthy as possible, and trying to take care of me.
Getting flies? Seriously.
We left the door open for 5 fucking minutes yesterday, and the flies keep coming in. Whatever. But yeah, they're pricks too, because they want to land on my nose while I'm gaming, and of course I slap the shit out of my face. I've probably given myself a black eye trying to get these fucking flies. Hey you. Anyway, yeah. So that's done. I needed a little bit of a break from Final Fantasy, though I still play that game way too much. I got through all of Space Marine 2. Yeah, so that is a video game ass video game, I'll tell you right now. There is
I need to play some of the co-op with you at some point.
I would be all right with the co-op, but there's a lot of stuff. It's got PvP in it. And I'm not super big on PvP, and it doesn't seem like it's. It's not the most balanced thing in the world.
There's a whole lot of like content that you don't get in the single player story mode. Away missions that I completely skip because I'm just playing by myself, you know?
Right. There's branched off attacks, to go on the story mode. Like you've got 2 or 3 squads going, and you're only taking part in the main squad, but the secondary squads are off doing, objectives that you don't get to do unless you do it in the operations mode. And that would be interesting to see because, some of those objectives seem interesting to go about doing. That game was it was short, but it was exactly the right length, if that makes sense. Right around the time I got to the end of it, I was ready to be done with it. And it just seemed like there wasn't a whole lot of like definition between bolters, but the melee weapons felt real nice. It was a good game. There's a lot of 40K lore that's put in there, and I've kind of got an idea of what's going to happen next in the story. So it's one of those games that I know that's, either going to get expanded on in the future, or there'll be a Space Marine 3 or something like that. It's fairly popular, which I don't think the first one was super popular, but this one's like it's getting news stories written about it,
I think it's because like that game knows what it is and doesn't deviate. It doesn't try to be something it's not. It doesn't weigh you down with side quests. It just like go forth and be a badass and then go to the next chapter.
And it does a very good job of making it look really goddamn good while being a badass. Like some of the set pieces, I mean, if you've watched any of the, the news on it, they probably will show you the first planet that you're on and just the sheer amount of bad guys that can be on screen at any one time. There's some really great moments, in that game that just like stand out. And it's competent in what it does. I had some problems with it because there was, I had some technical issues with playing that game. That game wanted to crash on me a lot. I was fighting it just to get it to go. Like I had, I would go for maybe less than 5 minutes, and then it would crash again.
That sucks. You ever get past that?
It sucked. It was very, very frustrating. Because, once you get into it, you just kind of you want to go. But, when it's, it'll crash, and it was, it would lock my machine up to the point where I'd have to, hard reset it. Which was, that's rough. I mean, it really sucked, but I didn't lose a whole lot of progress when it happened. It was just, I spent probably 10 hours playing the game, and I spent another 5 hours troubleshooting why I couldn't play the game. Because I tried DDUing my graphics drivers. I tried, different, Windows updates and rolling shit back. Deleting it and re-downloading it, verifying a bunch of other shit. There's Reddit posts about people having very similar issues, and it doesn't matter what game mode it is. It's, they were having problems with it in PvP and operations, and in just the normal story mode. And then some people, like yourself, Justin, didn't have any problems at all. So it's a weird thing, right? So I was able to get it stable enough to finish, and then by the time I was, by the time it finished, I'm like, thank God I don't have to fuck with this anymore. I can go to play games that are a lot more stable than this. But it was a fun ride. And the final boss is kind of a bitch. Like I said, I know where they're going to go story wise. I mean, if you follow anything that has to do with 40K, they're going Necrons next. I know it. It's basically, a foregone conclusion considering one of the areas that you go through. And the Necrons are an interesting race, to say the least. So, that's going to be very, 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 very cool when we get to go through that.
I wanted to finish it this week, and I've just had, I had two very difficult photo gigs back to back at the same venue. And I will say this, because while I like the venue, their lighting situation is trash. There's a bar here in town called the Whittier Bar that does exclusively small shows, right? They've got a capacity of maybe on a very, very full day, they can fit 100 people in there, right? And I know a lot of the local bands. And so Saturday, I went out there and took some pictures. It was three bands. And they're good about booking no more than three bands, which is perfect for me. But their lights, there's three lights over the stage. And for show one, it was blue and pink, it's pretty dark, right? It's already pretty dark. And without going too much into the weeds with it, it's dark enough that I think the particular camera model I have is probably the only thing that can reliably shoot in that kind of atmosphere. And on top of that, pink washes out your highlights. Just single solid colors wash out your highlights. It's good to have multiple colors on stage when you're trying to shoot pictures of people live. And of course, bands move, right? So you got to shoot fast and you've got to get enough light to shoot a picture. And so I spent an unreasonable amount of time editing photos for the three bands on Saturday. In fact, it took me all the way till Tuesday of staying up way too late and trying to edit. And then Wednesday night, I had another gig with three bands at the same venue. And this time, they just went straight red. And for those of you that don't use a digital camera, don't know is that red 100% of the time washes out your detail. Because I'm trying to explain. I don't have a good way of explaining this. Your camera sensor doesn't pick up red the way that it picks up every other color. It's the only primary color that a digital camera doesn't pick up the same way. So it really washes out detail. And it's not, it's also not that bright. Like, I watch different people post videos of the show, right? And you can't see what's going on stage because everybody just looks like blobs. Even with a good camera and good glass, it was me adjusting the white balance in a way that I brought out color blue, which is going to sound weird, but I was using it to offset the red, to make it more purple, to pull in blue so that I could get shapes with my camera, and then adjust out all the noise and everything else. And I told every band, I was like, all right, guys, so this is going to be straight black and white because this venue has shit lighting. Like, it's so bad that I posted a photo on social media and tagged the bar. I was like, yeah, challenge accepted. I'm taking pictures at the Whittier again. They're like, yeah, we're prioritizing our lights. And then I go back Wednesday and then like, holy shit, is it not just the absolute worst situation to take live photos in? Every photo took me 30 minutes to an hour to edit because I had to bring definition back into my photos. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that I take really sharp photos. And so I spent a lot of time editing noise in a way that you could see definition and then also correct the highlights, etc. So I spent a lot of time editing photos this week. This week, probably 60 hours of time editing photos between six bands. So around 8 to 10 hours a band, which is a lot.
That is a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had one band, I'm very friendly with them, but kept asking me to swap out photos because it made him look a little bit husky. I was like, dude, you are fucking killing me. I was like, you'd be like, thank your lucky stars that I picked my favorites and I didn't just dump all the photos because it takes up a lot of space. Every shoot takes up about 200 gigs, right? High definition photos take a lot of space, 50 to 100 megs per photo. And so I just had enough. I just had angles that weren't as favorite. So I swapped out like three different photos for him because, you know, he was using my post on his band page. He's like, I look a little husky in this one. Can we do a reshoot? It's like, God damn it, dude. You're fucking killing me. And then the last time that he did it, I went through and looked at everyone. I was like, is there any appearance of gut in any of these? I was like, if he tells me again, I'm just cropping it. I'm just going to crop it. Or I'm going to distort the image to make him look fatter and troll him.
That would be my first choice.
But he's the only guy in the band I don't know the best, but he's also the leader of the band, so I didn't want to be an asshole. I mean, sometimes I want to be, but like on the flip side of it, in the middle of the show, I actually got one of the guys like, hey, how much does it cost for a print of this? So I'm like, oh, I'm going to got to figure that out after the show. So I took pretty good photos, right? I'm proud of them. They're not as sharp as the things that I have taken in the past, but they're still better than 99% of the band photos out there. And that's still my goal. So what does that mean in terms of gaming? I did get a little bit of game in, and you might have some crossover here, Rusty. I did a little bit of, Space Marine 2.
Yep.
I did some Satisfactory.
Yep.
Some Abiotic Factor.
Nope.
And some Frostpunk 2.
And I did not do that one either. So
I'll talk about – let's talk about the crossover and then I'll talk about the stuff that isn't. So we talked about Space Marine 2. It's a hard game to like jump back into the action. It does a pretty good job of auto-saving, but it's kind of a hard game to like, for me, the stopping point is the chapter point, right? And so like I finished a chapter, I think I'm on chapter 3, And then that's where I put it down and started playing games that I could kind of pick at, right? Like, oh, I have some time here, or I'm not doing any editing, or I'm on the phone with my girlfriend or whatever. Here's a time that I can kind of passively play something, right? And so Satisfactory is one of those things. 1.0 came out this last week. And kind of had to like get my legs back under me for that game and try to remember what the goals were. And the goals are in that game are kind of just getting to the next thing. I'm working on the space elevator. I'm working on building better factories. I still haven't figured out a good way to just level out an area. Like, I feel like I need to just tear down everything that I built because I'm not super far in to get a better looking factory. I don't know how you deal with that, Rusty, but like I found an area near my iron, right? And that area near iron is like a very like I started building, I built out a flat area, right? And had enough room to build like a small factory that just did my concrete. And then I built some stuff for my metal, right? For my iron to build plates, to build the bars or tubes or whatever, and then to build the screws, to build the whatever the next tier of plate is or whatever, right? Plus right. plates and all that stuff. But then as I got further, I guess it was east of my starting point, because I needed to continue to expand my foundation. Now I'm in a spot where I'm like just building stairs up and my factory looks like shit. And I'd already built a copper factory over the top of my other one, right? And so now I've got to like tear everything down. Do you just build like way high? Because there's not a tool that levels out the terrain, is there?
No, there isn't a tool to level out the terrain, but you build structure. So what you need to do, because your structures are going to be flat. And the structures were also kind of, you know, grid shaped in a way, so you can kind of figure out what you do. So this is how
you find the highest point and then build out from there and then just like build foundation up to that point.
You don't have to do that. Just remember that, you know, because of how this game works, you can build up.
Yeah,
conveyor belts. So,
well, I went so far out that now I'm like building stairs up, right? So like, here's my pad, right? I've got my pad laid out and I've got like four, you know, constructors. Let me back up for a second. If you don't know what Satisfactory is, it's a game about assembling machines together to reach goals. That's like the super bare bones. It's all in 3D space.
You know, you know what Factorio is, it's Factorio, but in 3D so that you can build upwards.
And so what I'm running into is, right, so I got like four structures worth of length, right? So like, you know, smelter. What do they call it? Constructor and then assembler, whatever the first tier is, one that creates basic components. So I've got four of those laid out. And by the time I'm trying to get to my fifth one, right, because I need to continue building stuff in this assembly line, I'm like 10 meters up. So like I started out like one concrete square, right? And then I went to four, and then I went to four, and then I went to one, and now I'm finally level again. But if I go like two squares further forward, now I'm up like two more meters. So should I scrap all of that and just build elsewhere? Or would you build elsewhere and then just slowly, like, I don't understand. That's where I'm stuck. Like, I've got like 2 hours of redoing everything.
Don't redo things, because what you'll end up finding out is that your initial builds, especially when you're first starting, those initial builds are always going to look like shit. And they're not going to be even level or even fun to look at.
Yeah. I've got a whole, it just goes up in a huge upside down L right now because I don't have a space to put walls on one side because it clips my wires and it looks like shit. And so I just have this weird, awkward, like upper floor copper factory building wires and the cables. And it's like just hovering over everything and it's driving me bananas.
So I understand the tism is real, but it's what you have to do. Set your, you know, because you're, if you're working on like the very first tiers and you're trying to build the space elevator, you're not very far into the game at all.
Right. So like I'm trying to figure out what com- materials go into the space elevator because I haven't unlocked the recipe, but like now my tier level is locked, so I don't know what the fuck to do.
So what you need to do is you need to build the space elevator and it'll tell you.
No, I did build the space elevator. It's the material it wants me to put in there. I don't know what the recipe is.
Okay, so the space elevator.
It's like conductive plate or something. It requires
concrete.
Yeah, I built plates, it.
Bars, and, you know, you already built it.
I built it. It wants me to send material up to unlock tier 3, but I don't know how to get conductive plates. I don't know how to discover the recipe because it locked out the rest of the tech tree till I send up that material.
You have conductive plates. So I'm not that far. Yeah, and then a lot of shit has changed, so I haven't actually got to the space elevator yet, but I'm telling you from...
Oh, yeah, you're sitting there sounding like a smartass.
No. I've got, like, hundreds of hours in this game. I just restarted it as 1.0, so I don't know if any of the, you know, what has changed. But as far as base build is concerned, I've done that shit. I had a fucking huge-ass base. One thing to remember about your foundations, unless they changed it, it doesn't follow gravity. So you don't have to have it attached to a ground point like in fucking Valheim or some shit, you know? You can build a platform off of a fucking cliff in a direction. And as long as it's not hitting the edge of the map, you can have a whole flat-ass platform that just kind of, like, hangs off the edge of a cliff.
Which, now that you say that, I'm probably going to just put on a couple of good records and sit there and just, like, to me, that's the Zen game, right? Like, Satisfactory right. I'm going to talk about the non-Zen game here in a little bit, but Satisfactory is a serious Zen game. And mm-hmm. when you're having trouble, like, that's a... Sounds stupid. That's a major breakthrough for me because, like, I've got all these, like, elevated areas around me that I could mm-hmm. build off of. So would you say just scrap chunks at a time to build the factory on that thing and then move it?
Keep what you've got, of course, because you want to continue to build shit while you're doing this, right? Use your ugly-ass factory to get you the base shit that you're going to need to build the, you know, the structure that you want. Like, for me, you remember, mass transit is fucking key in this game. Like, when you get to the point where you can have trucks and trains and fucking drones and shit, that means that you don't have to, like, have spaghetti combining all of your factory. You can set up a truck to basically drop shit off for you. Or set shit up so that it loads into a train and it goes to the next next stage of the factory.
Okay, yeah, so, I've never gotten that far.
So when you're building, you know, building stuff, don't just, you know, you don't want to, you know, break it down because you're gonna end up having to, like, hand build shit to, you know, to build it back up. You want to just have what you've got going, get a new version of that of that built, and then you can kind of, like, you know, not rely on the small shit anymore. You can tear that down eventually.
I guess I could do, like, a switchback factory that just continues to go up, right? Like, so I don't build straight out.
That's kind of what I did. So, you know, for mine, it's like, you know, I get the plates, I get enough for the, you know, get all of the bars, the screws, the normal iron plates, get to the point where you can make reinforced plates, and get your concrete, basically, you know, have a concrete factory going and just put that concrete into a big storage container and constantly make concrete because you're going to need it.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. And then fuel was an issue for me pretty early on, right? Like, I don't want to go around, like, picking up leaves all the time. So
that's what I'm doing right now, actually.
I unlocked the chainsaw and, like, bulldozed a forest and filled up a container full of leaves and then built you know, the converter to build that to biomass and then that biomass into the biofuel log thing. And I got this big, really ugly, long line of conveyor belts that splits into six to go to all my power generators and just slowly feed it biofuel. And I know, you know, you unlock better fuel later, but, so that's what I got. I've got like not infinite, but it doesn't take me long to get the material because I got the chainsaw to get that. But I feel like the automated process for that, I don't remember what it was. I don't know if it was oil or hydropower or whatever it was, but
you end up getting, coal power
that you can mine and then put on a conveyor belt.
Yeah. So coal power, I know that the coal power had changed from like the very, you know, very early access stuff because coal power didn't used to require this, but coal power will require you to have fluid dynamics set up. So you need to pump water in so that you're turning the coal into, you know, in the coal generator into steam, basically. So you'll need to find coal and then find a source of water and then work out how to pump that water to your coal generators. And it each one of these... Lola's going to have a say here.
Oh, yeah, she's a... I don't know what she's... She's a deaf dog. Like, what is she barking at? She didn't hear anything. There's not a squirrel in my window like there was the other day.
But, yeah. Each stage of this adds a unique challenge. Like, to get coal, you got to find coal. And then you got to build the coal generator. And then you got to put... You know, get water. And you got to put... make sure that you've got enough water flow for the generators that you've got going, plus all of the, you know, enough coal to keep the generators going at full steam. And then you've got to pipe the power out of those generators to all of your shit and make sure that you've got a good power grid going. It's...
Well, they have this system too for unlocks. Again, this is Factorio in 3D, right? But they have this system now where you can take extra materials, right? And feed it into a ticket thing. And so any extra materials, so you take a storage container, right? Put a belt on it and then feed it to this thing that converts it into tickets. You can use these tickets to buy some extra things to help you with like cleaning up things. So like different wall types. I just bought some like, some places like, little nubs to connect power inside of buildings, right? So you don't have like fucking power lines like on power poles inside your buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And like wall conveyor belts and all this other stuff, right? And so I've been feeding something I've got a lot of, right? So for me, got a bazillion screws, like I say a bazillion, probably 10,000 surplus screws, right? And so screws sell for a lot on this little ticket converter. So I've just, you know, I'm going to grab about 3,000 of those and then throw it in that little warehouse, right? And get me some extra tickets for buying new shit. So it's got that. But it's, I appreciate the advice about just find something high and build off of it, because what I'm going to do now is start building a huge platform, right? Like I realize that with me running out of space, I don't want to necessarily do a bunch of switchbacks all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I'll clean it up and do that. Right. But there was a part of me that's like, man, it's going to take me a long time to transport materials back and forth like a fucking mule. Like I may just build temporary belts and feed stuff into other things and to get started, you know.
Did you start in the grassy area?
Yeah, I did the starter area cause I couldn't remember how to play the game. And then
I want to say it's the desert area.
It's a good game though. Like it just presents you, you know, it'll give you a goal of get this material, right? And that goal is not to be met by you handcrafting it, right? It's like, how do I automate this process? Let me start thinking about it. And things will align to a grid, right? Like the grid doesn't happen until you lay foundations, right? And so, like, kind of the key process is find copper, find limestone, find iron, right? And then that's your building blocks to really get started. And then later on, like, just built a conveyor belt that's like 3,000 meters long over to a quartz node because I need quartz to unlock some new technology and to avoid a bunch of like noxious gas and like creatures on the way. At some point, I'm hoping I unlock something better than my shock stick because that was not working against wasps.
You'll get a better shock stick.
Yeah, my shock stick sucks. But there was a bigger one of those, like they call them a hog, I think. Right. Yeah. There was a bigger version of that. And I walled him up in a pen because he was like in the way of my conveyor belt. So I built a pen and like lured him into it because I died like 6 times and then built a platform over the top of him so I could just repeatedly shock him until he died. And I fucking cheesed the fuck out of it, but I didn't know what else to do because I really wanted to build this conveyor belt to this quartz that was 3,000 meters away. It's a really ugly belt network that I got going for this, but like it goes over mountains and through streams and like it's the longest thing ever.
Well, you'll eventually be able to change that up for something like a truck. The trucks are actually really interesting. So when you get to the ability to make trucks, so it'll be a vehicle that you can drive around, right? It requires fuel. You could throw coal or something like that in it and it'll go. And it has a station, like a truck station, a fill station, and a drop-off station that you can build. You can build a conveyor belt to fill up the station with what you want to transport. And then you drive the truck over to the loading bay. It will load it, and then you hit, you'll hit like a record button on the truck controls, and then drive to the drop-off station, and it'll be like a little, rectangle that you stop in, and it'll unload, the stuff that's in your truck, and then you drive back to the load station, and then you just stop the recording, and at that point, you can jump off the truck, and it will just follow that loop, that same recorded loop that you did, and load and unload automatically. So you don't have and you can have
what happens if it runs into animals.
Well, when you clear out an area, most of the time it doesn't respawn. So
that asshole that was fucking with me, like he's going to be gone.
Yeah, most of the time it doesn't respawn. There's a couple things that can get in the way, and some things that will walk around in the way. Like there's some striders that walk around, big fucking fauna.
Do you build roads eventually for those trucks?
You can build roads eventually. And you can actually have those roads elevated and have skyways and shit like that. But by the time that you get to that point, you're also have the ability to do trains, which is basically the same kind of thing, where you have a load and unload spot for them, but you can set them up in a network so you can go load or iron ore at one point, unload that at the main base, and it'll continue on the track. And then, get another resource and then loop back.
How big is the planet? Like, how far does it extend? Yeah, does it?
It's pretty big. It's like, if you think that, it's big enough to be tedious to get certain, certain resources. Like, where you're at, you're going to have a hard time getting oil. Because oil is not anywhere near you. But if you go in a couple different directions, for a decent period of time, you're going to be able to find oil.
But I'm going to have to have a truck
for plastics and shit like that. So,
but I'll have to have a truck or a train to get it because it's so far away.
Well, it'll make things a lot easier once you get there. So normally what I end up doing is, like, if you get to that point, you go out with with your resource pack enough to be able to make, your harvester, whatever that's going to be, a couple, a couple like manufacturing things, some conveyor belts, yada yada yada, right? Go set up your initial, you know, setup for it, and then you work out your logistics on how to get that back to your main base. And then as you grow in the main base, you will upgrade your logistics and you'll upgrade your manufacturing at that site where the resource is, you know, incrementally, so that you can kind of like meet your needs. But don't go overboard at one point and like, you know, do what I did and just be like, I'm going to make a massive base that has way too many of any one thing so I never have to worry about it ever again, because you'll just get yourself bogged down. You'll not actually progress and you'll burn out hard.
It's an interesting game though, because it's a lot of problem solving the whole time, which keeps you engaged with the game. It's got a little bit of like conflict, right? Some of the fauna just doesn't want you there, right? And so there's that conflict that also kind of helps, but that loop of problem solving and building is pretty zen, and I like it. And like, yeah, it might be the perfect game for me right now based on like all the other chaos that I kind of got going on outside of this. It's a good game, right? It's in 1.0. There's a lot of features. It's a very big game. It runs pretty good, right? I'm not the use case for optimizations. I got a pretty beefy rig, and so do you. So I don't know. I don't think this is something. I mean, it might play on a Steam Deck. I don't know. But you'd want to have mouse and keyboard controls, I would think.
It is one of those games that, you know, that plays better with a mouse and a keyboard, because it's built that way. It probably will play on a Steam Deck. It plays on, you know, it plays on my laptop, but it has frame rate issues, whereas my rig has no frame rate issues whatsoever.
I still play it on, I got it on Epic when it came out, like, what, 5 years ago or something?
Yeah.
So it's the one game I have installed on my Epic account right now, because, you know, I'm not going to rebuy it just to add it to my Steam library. That's ridiculous.
I did.
Did you really?
Yeah. I bought it because, you know, I wanted that. I don't know. I'm dumb sometimes, but it was worth it to me to buy it in 1.0 on Steam, mainly because I wanted to, you know, to get. I don't use the Epic Game Store very often unless I absolutely have to.
If I was going to play it on Steam Deck, I might, just because it is a pain in the ass to use the Epic launcher on the Steam Deck. Mm-hmm. But since I'm not, I'm not going to do that. That's just crazy.
It's to each their own. That's perfectly fine. I decided to, you know, to support them because I know I'm going to play the fuck out of this game. That's just the way I am. But yeah, don't have to. Already have it from the early access. Yeah, by all means, stick with that.
Yeah, Satisfactory is a good game. If any of that factory building stuff sounds appealing, it's Rusty's got a case of the tism. I've got a case of the tism, right? Like it, you know, to different degrees. So for us, like this game satisfies that really, mm-hmm. really well. And when you're like, there is a fail state, but there's not, right? The fail state is just, the fail state is just annoyance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have a problem with just keeping up with you and your goals in this game versus the game actually saying no, you can't progress, because it's that damn good. Like, you can get bogged down in a build, and it's like, you know, like I was saying before, you can get burnt out just on that. But if you, you know, if you just kind of pace yourself on doing some, I've done some really awesome builds. I had a Skyway network for oil at one point because I hadn't got unlocked trains, or trains weren't in the game at that time. And that conveyor belt system, almost circled the entire map. And that takes some mental doing to continue that build.
Does it have an endpoint on the map of like, you've completed all the goals, now go back to space?
I haven't reached it. So the biggest question that I have about Satisfactory is there was always some items that weren't, that didn't have uses, in the game, you know, during early access. There were these little S looking things and Mercer spheres and things like that that were tied to the story, but didn't have a use in the early access. And I'm assuming that there's a win state to this game, or at least something that I haven't gotten to, I haven't spoiled myself on yet. That's probably going to be another 60, 70, 80 hours worth of, you know, of playtime before I even get to that point, you know? So it's a long game. And that's kind of one of the draws for me, is that it's like, I can play this game, you know, go into it, have like a goal of like, okay, I need to get this resource. And, you know, I can make that build happen and then go off and play other games. Or I could do that one thing and be like, hey, I need to get this resource. And then somehow I time travel and 14 hours have gone by. And I'm like, yeah, I needed that resource. Now I can build this and then this and then this. So, yeah, it's a thing. I highly recommend it. I mean, if you like setting up, Factorio or Dyson Sphere Program or anything like that, where you're setting up, factories and doing automation and you like setting, you know, dealing with ratios because you're going to deal with production ratios a lot. Yeah, you're going to like this game a lot.
Yeah, it's a good game. I played another building game of sorts. Played Frostpunk 2. It's a different game than Frostpunk 1. Here's what's the same. It's really cold. Everybody hates you. Heat is life. That's it.
So it's basically like normal life. Got it.
But
it's really cold and everybody hates me.
But you're not dealing with like single buildings. You're dealing with districts. And like your starting population is like 6,000 people. So you build these districts and then you build add-ons to those districts. I have lost 4 times so far on the very first chapter. I have not gotten the balance down. I'm playing on the easiest setting. I completed Frostpunk 1. I am not under... It's got a lot of tutorialization and menus, but it doesn't... It wants you to learn by failure. And I've failed so much lately that I'm kind of burned out. And I will get back to it, I think, because I did like Frostpunk 1, but I think the learning curve's kind of steep. And I've got so many other things that I'm doing that are very difficult right now that I don't want to play anything that hard. But it does, I mean, it looks better. It runs good on my machine, but I had to tweak it with, like, without DLSS or frame generation, it runs like shit on a 4090, which is crazy. Again, I'm running at 4K because I want to play it on a big display and I want it to look good. But when I say shit, like 40 or 30 FPS without DLSS or frame generation. I don't got a lot to say. Like, it's a tentative review, right? Like, I don't want to, I think they need to smooth out the edges when it comes to performance, at least. And maybe give a little bit more information on things like, I'm trying to think what's been fucking me the hardest. Didn't really tell me. So, like, the last time that I lost, right, I got overthrown because crime got out of control. And I didn't have the resources to, like, research takes so fucking long. And I don't know. It hasn't really made it clear. I just had a light bulb moment. I think the reason my research is so slow is I haven't built multiple research centers. That might be the issue here. So, starting with one research center, right, like, I'm not getting my research done in time to get to the next technology to help keep the cold at bay, if that makes sense, right? Because everything feeds off each other. You got your coal, which you use to heat your area, right? You have your materials, which feeds into everything. It's your central currency is materials. But those run out. And then you have to expand out into the cold, meaning you got to send research teams out into the cold to find new materials and new fuel sources, et cetera, to keep your team alive. But my research is what's been screwing me over. Is it just taken so long? And I think it is because I need to add more research centers. So that might be a thing. But yeah, like I keep failing, right? So, like, I failed 4 times where I just keep getting overthrown. And I just can't quite get the balance down right. Like, I understand, just like in Frostpunk 1, you would have nothing, not all things perfect, right? You'd always be failing somewhere with some supply issue, right? And you'd always be kind of struggling to hold on to it to get to the point where you could make it through a full year of whiteout or whatever it was. I can't remember. But Frostpunk 2 seems harder. And I think there's just so many more systems going on with. You've got a council to pass laws, right? So it's not just the different decrees that you'd make. You got laws, and then some factions support it, some don't. I was looking at the survival mode, right? Basically the endless mode where you'd set a goal for yourself and try to survive. And there's a lot more factions than what are in the chapter that I'm in right now, and they're always at odds with each other. And so it's always like a game of balance between did I piss off these guys too much or these guys too much, right? There's not a simple child labor thing. There kind of is. Like, child labor is necessary in this game.
Child labor is always for Frostpunk.
Child labor is necessary? Question mark.
For Frostpunk,
yes. But yeah, like that's. You have to. I don't think there's a way around that because you just don't ever have enough workers. But yeah, you're dealing with a scale of thousands versus like tens and hundreds, right, that you did in the first game. And you're not building single buildings. You're building districts. So like these houses are going to house like, you know, this is going to house a few thousand people. And then I'm going to do an add-on to this district to make it bigger. And you know, this factory requires 600 people. I'm 200 people short. So I'm going to pull some people from the farms to work in the factory because I need material. Like, there's a whole lot of like going back and forth. It's a very difficult game, though, is what I'm getting at. Not for the faint of heart. It does look really cool, though. You don't have to, like, it doesn't heat from a central ring, right? It just kind of tells you, like, how much heat you're lacking. All over, you hit an overlay and it tells you like, okay, these things are lacking heat, so I need to get more coal. And if I get more coal, that'll heat everything up 20 degrees or whatever, right? But I need to unlock the technology to get better insulation for my houses, right? Or I need to put these heating stations next to these districts to heat them up. And you got these little tubes that like extend out that it automatically builds in very, very logical and straight lines out from the center that have like what looks like lava flowing through them, I guess is heat or whatever, that kind of start building out from your station. It doesn't lay out in the grid that you want though. So if you have any sort of OCD about that, like everything's in hex grids, but it doesn't lay out in straight lines. It lays out in curves. But the curves aren't always straight. So that kind of bugs me a little bit too, because I used to build out very meticulously. Like, because in the first game, you built roads, right? You got to build a road over to a resource. And then, you know, you built roads, you build individual houses, right? This one's all about districts. It's a different kind of game. I don't know how much I like it though. And right now, Satisfactory is more satisfactory. Because it's a little bit more zen. I've already been dealing with the dark souls of photo editing for the last week. Like, my brain needs a break.
Yeah, sometimes that's just the way it is, man.
Abiotic Factor, still playing that a little bit. I think I mentioned this last week. It's built out in sections, and I'm not nearly far enough, but there's an end state to the current build of the game. Right, and then they're just going to add on to it. So the way that the early access for Abiotic Factor is working is they're creating new sections of the game. So everything that's in the current section is feature complete, right? And they've made tweaks to it as they've gone along, but the aim is that as they build out, they just add a new section to the game and then make that an endpoint on that section, right? And so that's how they're plotting it out. I just haven't finalized moving my base or moving an outpost to where I'm at to kind of explore the new area. I'm looking for chains to make new things and better weapons because the human enemies are eating my lunch. I'm trying to build a disc launcher, which will launch discs at soldiers that have machine guns. Abiotic Factor, though, is really good. I just have to be in a mindset of, do I want to play that or Satisfactory? Like, those are the two things that I think are the biggest on my radar right now. And then Star Trekker. If all else fails zen-wise, then Star Trekker is my comfort food. Because that game's good, as Jason has said.
It is really good.
How many trailers do you unlock, Jason?
So there's a skill that you unlock that allows you to, haul multi-trailer loads. So you can't haul more than one contract at a time, but what it does is it opens up contracts that have multiple, load trailers on them. So now that I have that unlocked, there's been a load that was like four trailers. But the game itself already has the four trailers linked. So you're just hooking up to, one of the trailers on the end and then pulling that.
Are you finding that it gives you a pull through, or are you having to back those multiple trailers in to drop off your load?
That one gave me a pull through. There was a double that I had to back in.
Yeah, I had
to. That was interesting.
That took me like 10 minutes to figure out.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I finally figured out that the best strategy was to line myself up to come over the back of the target.
That's what she said.
And then pull in from a downward angle and straighten out the load so that I could pull straight back with very minimal turning so that the two trailers didn't like hit each other.
Okay.
Because if the two if your trailers hit each other, they can damage each other.
So how are you managing it when it's just going all over the place? Like at a certain point, it's like a double reverse or a triple reverse.
It is. And that's really hard to describe. It is a whole lot of combining your turning also, but also with your rotational thrusters, and using up and down more in the mix than left to right. Because when you're changing the angles, it kind of helps to force the trailers into a line.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've just that's the
you also thing. You also tend to pitch up and down steeper than you turn left to right.
Yes, you do.
So using that instead of straight left to right turns to back multi-load into something is a hell of a lot easier. So using rotation is the key. But it will still take you a little bit to figure it out.
You should try it out, Rusty.
I have a lot of shit that I need to try out, man. It's just I have limited time as well, and some of the games that I pick up just they tend to, you know, suck me in for long periods of time. So, like, you know, Satisfactory is not a short game. You know, Final Fantasy never ends. You know. Thankfully, you know, Space Marine 2 only had like 10 hours worth of.
So you beat something.
So I wanted, yeah, I just, I needed to say that I beat something, and this is, that allowed me to do so. But yeah, it's just, I have it downloaded. I just need to give it a try. So, yeah, here's a thing. Oh my
god. Do we want to take a break?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back. And we're back.
Woo woo.
Yeah. Woo. 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 Digging around for some news. There is, I think, the biggest piece of news right now is that Pocket Pair is getting sued. If you don't know who Pocket Pair is, you've probably heard of Pal World, right?
Oh, yeah. Fucking, yeah. I kind of knew that was coming, though.
Yeah, they were sued for patent infringement.
So, okay, I remember hearing about this on the WAN show. Basically, Nintendo's getting them on patents in reference to how the player engages with the pals.
That's speculation. So, PC Gamer did a story the other day that said they were digging and they found a patent that had to do with how things were captured. And it was this really rudimentary drawing of a guy throwing something to catch something that looked like a T-Rex. And so there was a PC Gamer article that dealt with, it was probably having to do with the sphere grids, right? And the fact that you capture creatures and then make them work for you, right? Where in Pokemon, like, you capture the creatures to make them fight. Power World does something similar. You wear a creature down, then you capture it, and you use it for work or for battle or for any number of things. The whole, like, loop of that game is build and then use the creatures that you have to help facilitate those building and creating and moving further out, right? Power World put out a statement in regards to that, and I will actually just read this statement. So this came out 3 days ago, said, regarding the lawsuit, yesterday a lawsuit was filed against our company for patent infringement. Received notice that this lawsuit will begin the appropriate legal proceedings and investigation into the claims of the patent infringement. At this moment, we're unaware of the specific patents we are accused of infringing upon, and we've not been notified of such details. Pocket Pair is a small indie game company based in Tokyo. Our goal as a company has always been to create fun games. We will continue to pursue the goal because we know that our games bring joy to millions of gamers around the world. Power World was a surprise success this year, both for gamers and for us. We were blown away by the amazing response to the game and have been working hard to make it better for our fans. We will continue improving Power World and strive to create a game that our fans can be proud of. Just a little bit left. It's truly unfortunate that we'll be forced to allocate significant time to matters unrelated to game development due to the lawsuit. However, we will do our utmost for our fans to ensure that our indie games developers are not hindered or discouraged from pursuing their creative ideas. We apologize to our fans and supporters for any worry or discomfort all this news has caused. As always, thank you for your continued support of Power World and Pocket Pair. So they're getting sued for patent infringement, right? And it's speculated upon that it has to do with the Sphere Grid. There's also speculation that Nintendo wouldn't create a lawsuit if it wasn't sure that it could win. There was a lawsuit they did for patent infringement on a mobile game recently where they won $15 million. Now, Power World did sell Gangbusters, right? It didn't sell at a very high price point, though. $15 million for Pocket Pair could really significantly crush it.
Mm-hmm.
As that is the only game they've released. To my knowledge, right? So, like, I don't know where it is. So, like, yeah, some of the creature designs are very similar to Pokemon, but so is Digimon, right?
Right.
I'm not the biggest, like, Power World fan. I think it's a pretty neat game. It's not my favorite game, but I've enjoyed my time. And it just kind of came to an end of the loop, basically. So I stopped playing. It wasn't anything to do with me not liking the game. I was just like, okay, well, this is really early access because we played it like a week after it came out. So it's, you know, just kind of waiting for more to come out. So it's, I don't know. Nintendo's annoying with this kind of stuff, right? Like, just, I'm probably not going to be the first to say this, but like I've ungrown a lot of Nintendo IPs because Nintendo tends to focus on really safe and kind of boring games to me anymore, right? Like everything's very kid-friendly. I'm a 42-year-old adult. Like I'm probably not going to play another Mario game for the rest of my life. I'll play another Super Meat Boy. Not everything has to be blood and guts, but like just the super cartoony, goofy-ass platformer game or Zelda being super cartoony and then there just being a ton of games like Darksiders, etc. that expand on that formula and make it something a little bit more adult and dark and a little bit grosser and a little bit more gritty that really hold my attention more than the goofy stuff. And with Power World kind of having a humorous spin with, you know, these creatures having guns. And the building and everything else. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's something Nintendo would never do anyway. This is way fucking cooler than any Nintendo property right now. Yeah, fuck yeah. Let me give it a shot. And it's not bad. Needed, I think, more passes on some of the boss mechanics and stuff like that. But, like, as a whole, pretty neat. Nintendo, like, just needs to grow the fuck up. Like, they're not making... They are making IPs that sell, right? Like, the Switch is still around, but, like, Nintendo is this weird, backward-ass company that, like, underpowers everything, right? Like, goes for the biggest audience possible, still caters to kids, even though the gaming generation, the original gaming generation is our age, right? It's late Gen Xers, Xennials, and Millennials that are the people with money to pour into games, right? Like the younger generation's playing free to play and then they've got about, you know, five games a year that they can buy, right? If you're a college student, you're going to get a game subscription like Game Pass and then spend money on like three or four games, right? Because $70 is a lot as a college student. whole lot of late 20s to early 40-year-olds, though, that have fairly stable jobs that are struggling with this economy but can afford to buy video games when they want a video game and play it for a while, right? Like, we're where the market is now for having the money to spend money on games. Like up your game, Nintendo. Make a nice system. Quit focusing on just kiddie games. Like, give us a couple of, like, games with more adult themes, that more mature themes, better writing, less cartoony. Quit reusing the same IPs you've used for 40 fucking years. Right? Come up with some new IPs. Like, you're not that cool. I haven't bought a Nintendo product since the Wii U, and there was like 4 cool games on there.
I mean, I bought a Switch. I played Breath of the Wild. I haven't even turned it on. I honestly have not even wanted to turn it on. And the newest Zelda didn't appeal to me at all. Because it doubled down
on the durability.
The one thing I didn't like about it was the whole weapon system, and that didn't really change all that much. So, like, all right, it's not for me anymore.
And you can't, like, occasionally you'll get like a like every port that comes to that from a third party company is the worst version of that port. It's always the worst version of the game is going to come to Nintendo. Didn't used to be like that, right? In the 90s, like, Super Nintendo was where it was at, right? And then you had a little bit gorier games on Sega Genesis. So if you want a little bit more gore, you play Sega Genesis. But there was a shitload of RPGs, a shitload of side-scrollers, a lot of, like, more adult-style games. Like, more mature themes back in the Super Nintendo days. Like, Maximum Carnage was on Super Nintendo, right? Just mm-hmm. Spider-Man beat him up. with Carnage. Right. But still, like, you know, they were a little bit more grown up, and maybe it might be nostalgia talking, right? Like, Super Nintendo, in my mind, was, like, the best console ever created. But it's been 25 years, right? Like,
yeah. Nintendo, and games have moved on since then.
Yeah, it's... Wii focused on moving around. Wii U focused on moving around, plus having a sort of handheld console. Switch has been a handheld focused console that's underpowered, and like, you don't see an Elden Ring port to freaking Switch, right? Like, Elden Ring runs great on your Steam Deck, and they cost the same, and there's a huge library, like every PC game, right? Not all of them run on the Steam Deck, but a vast majority of them do, and then Valve does things to optimize it to make it work with, you know, or work with a developer to make it work with their game. And they're selling like Steam Deck is again the top seller again this week on Steam. Just again. Like every couple of weeks it turns into the top seller on Steam. Like, they are doing gangbusters on the Steam Deck mm-hmm. as being definitely the best handheld console you can get. I understand there's some more powerful versions right there, like the Asus ROG, right? Is that one of them? There's a couple of out there, but nothing is optimized for it in the way that Steam Deck is optimized for games. Like, you literally don't even have, like, they've made it such a console at this point. You don't have to do anything. You load a game and it says, oh, it's a Steam Deck. It loads the optimized settings, and then you can tinker with it after that, but it sets it to a playable setting from the get-go without doing shit. It just does it. And then on the back end, Steam optimizes or works with developers to optimize games to make them work. There are more powerful mobile PC consoles out there. Steam Deck is literally where it's at. As it just has native support for everything that it shows it supports. And works like a mini PC too. I mean, there's a lot of times that, like, you know, I've got 2 more trips, right, that I've got planned out. I was on a work trip and I had it set up. I should have sent you guys pictures. But I took the ironing board that was in the closet in the hotel room, connected mm-hmm. it with my dock, which is a third-party dock. I don't even have the official dock, right? But I connected an HDMI cable to the TV in there and then have a portable – I had a very, very small portable keyboard and a small battery-operated mouse. I plugged those into the dock. I had PC gaming was playing. I can't remember what I was playing. I was playing something with keyboard and mouse. I can't remember what I was playing. But anyways, it might have been. I know I played a little bit of Shin Megami Tensei. I played a little bit of RimWorld while I was in my hotel room, right? Like it's just it's magic. It's like one of the coolest little inventions ever. And the more travel that I'm doing, like the more use I'm getting out of it. I don't usually sit around and play Steam Deck at home. I prefer my premium experience. But if you had a choice between this is like a series. If you had a choice, like all I can afford is a PS4, but I could afford a Steam Deck, I would get a Steam Deck. I know that sounds crazy, but you've got a bigger library of games. Some games you can't get because it's PlayStation exclusive, but expandable memory is another thing, right? Like, I've got a 1 terabyte card that I got on the cheap. I found a sale on Amazon for $50 for a 1 terabyte micro SD. Formatted it, plugged it in. I can't tell the difference between that and the NVMe that's on there, right? And I got the cheap version of the LCD Steam Deck. I know there's an OLED version, but right now I think the LCD version is like $250 right now on sale. Just it's crazy. Yeah. It's such a good little device for PC gaming. And with all the expandable options you have with it, it's just nothing touches it. But like Nintendo, that's a big rant from Nintendo is I outgrew Nintendo 10 years ago. And I don't see a reason to go back. You can get a better handheld experience in a lot of places.
They really haven't innovated. They just reiterated. And
they haven't innovated their IPs. Like, I've been waiting for a Metroid to come out forever. And instead of doing that, I just start playing Metroidvanias, right? Because
they're better.
Right. Like, Axiom Verge is a legitimately good game, right? Blasphemous is a legitimately good game. The Last Faith is a legitimately good game. I realize it's not Metroid. Axiom Verge is the closest you'll get to Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
But which is also very good. But they just haven't done it. And I don't want to see... I want to see them shift focus for I do shit with them. So...
They've got to. Because it's just... You know they're fucking, like, holding onto their purse string, and they'll sue anybody they want to, just to make sure that they, that they'll keep their, they keep that, little bit of revenue stream going. But I think it's funny, because one of the things that, that's sold gangbusters for, Nintendo handhelds was Monster Hunter. And now, Capcom is seeing that there is a much, much bigger audience that they can get into get to play Monster Hunter if they don't just stay with Nintendo. I mean, if you look at the vast majority of Monster Hunter games,
Monster Hunter is the only good thing Nintendo's done in a long time.
Right,
and that's Capcom.
And that was just basically because. Capcom, the way that game was built for essentially like the Japanese commute. Like you play Monster Hunter on the bus or on the subway train with people who are also on the bus or subway train getting to work. That's why the hunts are like no more than like 5 to 10 minutes long. And it's very sectioned up. You can do a little thing while waiting for, life to go by. But when Monster Hunter World came out for, other consoles, essentially, Xbox, eventually PC, things like that, it opened up Capcom's eyes because they're like, oh shit, we can put Monster Hunter games out on, much better hardware. Go much bigger and have a way bigger audience. Monster Hunter World is one of the biggest things that Capcom has actually put out. Period. So, I think that Nintendo will eventually get their due. Like they're right now, they're just like, they're holding on to just like, the nostalgia pill, and they're going to let it, it's going to slip very soon, I think, probably within the next generation. They're not going to be able to keep up. I mean, even with, new hardware, they've got to have games to go with it. And that's one of the big things. That's one of the reasons why I haven't picked up any game for the Switch, because none of them really are marketed properly. And they're just not great games. So, yeah. I'm with you. They need to modernize, and they need to diversify their, the gaming catalog, and include the people that they've alienated. And maybe, just maybe, not be as anal retentive as it is, as they are right now, by going after things like fucking Pocket Pair and Pal World just because they were successful in their little endeavor.
Yeah, I feel like they're just cash grabbing at this point. It's not the same Nintendo I grew up with.
Well, it used to be good guy Nintendo. Now it's not good. And lately, probably within the last like 5-10 years or so, Nintendo has been like the bad guy, especially considering all of like the takedown requests for
music and everything
on YouTube for shit, the war on ROMs, like the old ROM sites, those are all gone now. Just because Nintendo is just lawyer hungry on a lot of shit. So I can spit venom at Nintendo all day, though.
No, I mean, I really can too, because they just annoyed the piss out of me the last several years.
Yeah, it's just, they just continue to be, they continue to be the company that I don't want to support with my dollars. And I think that's really the only way you're going to get their attention, is if you don't support them with their with dollars. So, yeah, I'm actively not buying fucking Nintendo products unless I absolutely fucking have to. And I'm not missing anything, I don't think. So, let's see. In other news, let's see. So Final Fantasy 16, yeah. Had to do my Roman numeral math there for a second. That came out, last year, I think it was, or early this year for PlayStation. It just hit Steam and the PC market, in this last week. And it's been a pretty big launch for them. So it has gotten a lot of traction on Steam, and there's a lot of people playing it, for being a single player, Final Fantasy game. They've had, just under 30,000 concurrent users, which is not bad at all.
Yeah. That's the one that we played on PS5 last year, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one that was on PS5. Yeah. So that's the one with Clive, and it's the more adult version of Final Fantasy. It was more, had to do with like army movements and tactics. And it wasn't necessarily all like, it wasn't kids. It was, it was a very adult story, which I praised it for at the time, because it was, it was mature. It had its ways of doing, questing and stuff like that. But I mean, there was some, you know, it had some very mature theme to it. And it was enjoyable to play all the way through. I enjoyed the story of it. So, I even got Cam to play it. And he enjoyed the fuck out of it. That has, it's been a pretty big release, for him on Steam. Though I have heard, from multiple different sources that, it has some optimization issues. People are, you know, struggling even with the best rigs to be able to get to 60 frames per second. You know, so chances are that's just like you're going to need to, you know, it'll be an optimization thing. It is a port, you know, so it's one of those things is going to be fixed with either a driver update or some post PC launch up, you know, updates. And they're fairly decent about doing that. The game was beautiful on PlayStation. I enjoyed the fuck out of it there. I won't buy it on PC. It's just one of those games that I probably will not buy on PC just because I have it on my PlayStation. Why would I do that?
Yeah, I haven't finished it. I don't even remember the finish of it. It's been so long.
Oh yeah. Well, it's a decent game. It's, you know, it is Final Fantasy, but it's also like Final Fantasy, the action game too. So it's got that. It's not too bad. Like I miss the days of the turn-based Final Fantasy games.
I know there's a game, if you miss that, on Game Pass right now called Sea of Stars. It is
Sea of Stars.
It is a love letter to old Final Fantasy, and it looks like it just came off Super Nintendo.
Perfect. Okay.
I was
Sea of Stars, huh?
Trying to get into something new. That was one of the things I downloaded late last night.
Okay. Well, let's take a look here. Ooh. All right. Well, I will save that for later. But yeah, that is one of those, one of the things that popped up in my feed. It's doing well. But know that you're probably going to run into some performance issues, especially if you have an older machine. Let's see, do. There's lots of little shit. lots of little shit. You got anything else?
Go ahead, Jason.
There is a story here about a little game called GTA 5.
Oh, a little one, huh? Yeah.
Just a little tiny game.
Who's heard of it?
So, this past week, Rockstar updated GTA Online with BattleEye anti-cheat and implemented it on the kernel level.
Oof.
Which unfortunately made it incompatible with Linux systems and the Steam Deck.
Nice.
And of course they implemented it because cheating's always been a problem on the game. And it's gotten bad enough they were trying to get really aggressive to root them out. So the Rockstar claimed that Steam Deck does not support BattleEye, but unfortunately that's a mischaracterization. Steam Deck, with its compatibility layer, does support BattleEye. Most Linux systems don't, unless, you know, you're running a really good compatibility layer. But what has to happen is basically the developer has to, send some proper stuff to Valve so that they can add the additional kernel stuff to their compatibility layer. But because that wasn't done, basically Valve has decided to refund GTA 5 for any Linux and Steam Deck users who bought the game via Steam. And they will basically get that as a credit in their Steam wallets with, and should have it by now, because as of this story, Wednesday last week, it was within 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah. That's actually, it's an interesting way of going about it instead of trying to figure out why to, how to fix it.
Yeah.
They just go ahead and just refund it. But,
and players who decide not to claim the refund will still be able to, of course, play the story, but you're not going to be able to play GTA Online.
Which is most of the reason why people buy that game right now.
Well, because outside of the campaign, that's where, pretty much all the new heist missions and everything else are, is in GTA Online.
Well, it's got its own... I mean, it has staying power. How long ago did that fucking game come out?
Like early 20-teens?
Yeah, it was a long-ass time ago. Almost an MMO at this point.
Not gonna lie, I had a lot of fun with it way back then. I did not see that it was going to stay this long. I am looking forward to GTA 6. Again, the story mode of 5 was fun enough. Right? Fairly open. Pretty irreverent, goofy. I know it's like the... I'm kind of over being the indie kid of games and just playing the stuff that nobody likes. But, long story short, I'll play GTA 6 when it comes out. It's kind of its own thing, and nobody has really recaptured that same exact game loop the way that they have. So, but I'm just going to play single player mode. I could give a rat's ass about the multiplayer mode.
I never really got it.
You guys are the ones that I know that game with any regularity anymore, and you guys, it's very hard for us to get into multiplayer anything ever, so for me, it's single player.
Right. Yep. Well, I don't know. GTA 6, I'll probably play it. I don't know. I don't know. It depends on on where they go with it, how they try to market that, and what it is. So I know it's a crime story. No matter how you go about it, GTA is going to be a crime story, right?
Yeah.
And maybe I just have, maybe I'm just, I don't know. Maybe I'm over that.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I like Goodfellas, right? But in general, I think it's just the game loop that I like.
It might be. I don't know. Me driving around a fucking city is just another fucking thing. I don't know. Come up with some new fucking things, man.
Well, I mean, since the original GTA, the appeal of those games is constantly within the new characters they write, right? Gameplay loop, virtually aside from some improvements and, some additions as technology has grown, is largely still the same. That's a series that now will, for the most part, as far as success of the single player experience, rely on the characters and story that they craft, right? And GTA 5 really excelled at GTA 5 really excelled at some great moment-to-moment story beats, especially with Trevor and all of his craziness.
Yeah, well, Trevor is a character. But yeah, I don't know, and I want to see where they go with it. Obviously, it is just gonna be it's gonna be a new tech thing too as well, because you know they're gonna be putting new graphics and new systems and new, and making that that game actually work. That's one of the reasons why GTA 5 works so well, is people use it as a racing sim with mods and shit, I mean, I see a lot of fucking TikToks with of people doing crazy fucking midair shit with it, different tricks and different modded tracks and stuff like that. So we'll see how this all works out. I don't know. I might not like it, but I also, didn't necessarily like Sekiro, and everybody likes Sekiro, so. Except for Justin. Justin didn't like Sekiro. Maybe we're just basically on the same wavelength.
Sekiro was the ultimate experience, the ultimate challenge to my patience, is that it wanted you to find that perfect strike like 5 times in a 5-minute fight. And that just didn't vibe with me. I wanted to be a little bit more engaged other than just parry, 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 wear him down, parry, 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 wear him down, dodge, parry, 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 parry. Like it's Dark Souls just feels better. I'm sorry. It just feels so much better.
Dark Souls has that Monster Hunter combat that you're looking for. And not just the parry system.
Yeah, it's so parry based. And very meh for me, right? Very meh.
Yeah.
But, got a couple of quick stories I just want to share before we get out of here. Right now, God of War Ragnarok just got released on Steam. It's being review bombed. I checked just to check live, real time, how bad is it being review bombed? It's 67% right now, positive. The overwhelming majority of comments have to do with the fact that it requires PSN. And so I think that people are seeing what happened with Helldivers and trying to do the same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll see. Ragnarok was pretty good. We played the hell out of it for a little while last year. On PS5. That's actually one of the few times I jumped on a console.
Yeah, that was, I think that was, yeah, that was, one of the last times I jumped on a console myself. That game, solid. Very good game. It being review bomb, I'm not a big fan of review bombing, because honestly, unfortunately, it's one of the only things that gets the attention of the studio. If there was a different way, I'm sure that, a different or better way, I'm sure that it would be done. But this is, because studios and executives in a studio look at those review scores and they're gospel for them as to whether or not they're, doing well or not. That's the only thing that gets their attention.
Yeah. I don't understand it.
What review bombs actually do negatively, though, is good games end up getting, buried for people who are not familiar with the game or are looking to, get an honest review of a game. A review bomb will basically if you look at something that's like average or below, you know, just at a glance, and you've never even heard of the game before, which, you know, admittedly, God of War, pretty much anybody that's been gaming in the last 20 years probably knows God of War. But if it was a smaller game or a different game, it would be just, it would be hard to weed out whether or not the game is actually good through the review bomb. And a lot of times you only get like 10 seconds. Like if, you know, if you're a developer, you know, put something up on a storefront, you only get the attention of a person for 10 seconds or less.
Well, like I'll go through my wish.
How long does it take for you to, you know, determine whether or not you want to hit the wish list button on a game. If you're going through the discovery queue, for instance, you're probably clicking through, you know, one screen a second or more, depending on how fast your internet is.
I'll even go through my wish list and look at stuff that's mixed and then look at why it's mixed and then just pull it straight off. Right. Or yeah, if it goes straight negative, you're like, why is it negative? And if it's, you know, I at least understand the trends. So I'll look to see why people are review bombing it. And if it's like gameplay related, I'm just like, yeah, probably not worth my time. I've got like 300 games on my wish list, you know. Yeah, and I need to weed this out.
And that, you know, that takes, I mean, just having stuff on the wish list, you know, lets the developers know there's interest. Because, I mean, that's one of the things that they use as a metric. So, yeah, it's a shitty way of dealing with a you know, with a corporate problem, you know, especially if it's a corporate problem for a different game, and then they go and fucking review bomb everything that has been put out by, you know, that publisher, for instance. You know, that means that good games that are good and have no problems are getting fucking, you know, trashed because people are mad at the publisher and not the developer. And that sucks for the developer. You know, hardcore, because, I mean, they didn't do anything wrong. They just happened to be affiliated with a, you know, with a company that made a mistake or had a bad business decision for a different game. That's, I don't know. Hopefully, and I hope that someday we'll, you know, get past this bullshit. But then again, you know, I don't know.
The feedback's been given. That's the way to get a hold of the developer. So that's what's going to continue to happen.
Yep. And that, and until, until publishers and developers have a better way that still holds them accountable publicly, you know, to be able to do this, because, you know, everybody knows the suggestion bins go to fucking File 9, and nobody ever hears anything from it. From, you know, if you have a complaint, send something to this email, and it gets fucking immediately sixed. So, it's got to be public. It's got to be like you got to have a public forum to be able to, you know, to bomb essentially and make it, you know, make the publisher and the, you know, or developer accountable for an action, you know, so that it be picked up on, you know, by media or reported on or commented on a podcast or whatever, you know. And that's the only way you're going to get anybody to, you know, or any of these big ships to move in a direction, because it's not going to be immediate in most cases. So right now, review bomb is the only way to do it. So, and I don't even have a good way of actually, like, I don't have a suggestion as to how to fix this problem. I just acknowledge that it's a problem.
Agreed. There's another two quick bits. There's multiple outlets giving tentative, I guess there was a 6-hour preview of Veilguard Dragon Age, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of different outlets seem to give it some praise, so I'm kind of cautiously optimistic. There is a continuity from Inquisition to this Dragon Age. You'll have four different voice actors that you can choose from, and you'll be able to customize your character. I've seen some really bad customization of characters, so it's a pretty robust system, and to the point of like looking like a crazy cartoon character with a crazy square chin, like something from the, what are they called, the Invincibles or whatever from Pixar. Like looking like one of those characters. I saw like some pretty ugly characters they were making, but it like it proved a point, like this is pretty robust. So you can do whatever you want with a character creator. That's kind of neat. And then it has you kind of pick what a does it say you can pick? So it does pick up from Inquisition. There's no class system that it shows of what you're starting out as. So I guess you're kind of building the class as you go. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. Yeah, you'll be able to select major character background choices from Inquisition. So that is interesting. I believe that comes out sometime next month. Is that right? An Age Belgarde release date. October 31st. Okay, so it's still over a month away. I'll be cautious about it. I may pick it up. I don't know. I'm a Dragon Age fanboy. But I've been really not real keen on the art style in this game. So I...
There's been some negativity as far as, you know, the reception for that.
The weird thing is the reception was negative initially from the get-go from all the media outlets, the major media outlets, like your PC Gamer, your IGN, your Kotaku, you know, your Ars Technica, like your larger GameStop, GamesRadar, all those, right, like had some kind of negative impressions. They all go to this press conference, and all of them are saying better things about it, and I don't know what that means. Does that mean it was good, right? Like, what happened? So I'm not of the opinion that people get paid off, although sometimes they do, as we talked about, right? What was that game where they were giving them the Disney passes to go play the game? Oh, that was Star Wars, the newest one, which is still panned out to be a kind of mediocre game across a lot of fronts. So I think the performance is really the biggest thing, but also just the sum of its parts not being that great. Like, I still didn't want to spend, just baseline getting into that game was $70. And for a game that's kind of scoring low, I'm fine. And apparently a lot of other people read into that and also didn't buy it because Ubi's struggling after the release of that game.
Oh,
I mean, boo-hoo, you've got like freaking 30,000 employees at Ubisoft. I kind of wish you'd splinter off into like be a publisher and let smaller studios publish games. Ubisoft is ridiculous. And then the only other thing I have is right now we're all AMD chipset fanboys when it comes to CPUs. The new Zen 5 based Ryzen 9000 has not been selling hardly at all.
Yeah.
And I don't think from every account, it's not because it's like one hidden, not really hidden factor, but maybe one oversight. You have to upgrade a big chunk of your system to get into the Zen 5, right?
Well,
you need a new motherboard, more than likely, right? And new RAM. Yeah. And that's a big investment, right? You got your CPU, which is already, I don't know what the price tag is on this. Let's see, Ryzen 9 9950, right?
So the problem with the with these Ryzen chips, the Ryzen 9000 chips, is that they're struggling to get the same performance as their previous generation.
Oh, 649. Yeah, 649 plus a new motherboard and RAM. Yeah. So you're $1,100 into getting a CPU upgrade? I will kindly fuck you, sir.
So I know a lot about this because this is exactly what I was running into. I was waiting for the 9950X to come out and I bought the, you know, the Zen Vibe board. The thing is the Zen Vibe board, the previous generations, you know, like a 7800X3D works in them, you know, works in the Zen 5 board. So the boards have been out for at least a generation.
But you're still talking about an easy 250 on a board, right?
Well, yeah, it depends on, you know, the features that you're looking for in the board, but you know.
But is that how much you spent? 250 or 300 bucks?
About 250 is what I spent on mine.
Right. Okay. And plus 649. That's $900 and you haven't even got to your RAM.
Yeah. Now, yeah. The thing is, if you already had a Zen, you know, so if you already have a Zen 5 chip, like if you had last generation 7800X3D, there is literally no reason, if you're a gamer, I'm going to give that caveat out. If you're a gamer, there's literally no reason to upgrade from the 7800X3D to the 9000 series at this time. It might change if they come out with a 9800X3D, but doubtful. So
what's the difference between the chips?
The reason is this chip here, it has to do with how they do their processors. So they have a chiplet design. Some of the cores are on, you know, on one chiplet, some of the cores on the other. For gaming, the problem here is that to be able to unlock the best performance possible, you have to park the secondary cores. So you have to turn off half of your processor, essentially, to be able to optimize the core, you know, have optimized cores to be able to game on. So the 9950X, for instance, half of those cores I would have to park and turn off, essentially, while I'm playing games. And they would be available for, like, background tasks, and they would, you know, do a little thing, but it's like 1-5% of the processing your computer does while you're playing a game is the background. So you're really looking at essentially the same chip from the previous generation, 7800X3D, anybody, because, you know, it's the same amount of cores that's live in the 9950X. And ouch. It has, you know, the X3D has the additional, caching capabilities. So, there's no reason to upgrade to it. And because the price is, it's not priced for its performance, they're having a really hard time, trying to get people to buy them. And that sucks because it really should have been a slam dunk for AMD. But the reality here is that AMD marketed the chips as power efficiency versus performance. And they do have better power efficiency. Like, they run on less power and get about the same performance as last gen. But most people who are upgrading are not necessarily looking at power efficiency, especially if they're looking at gaming.
My PC uses the most power of every device in my entire house.
Right. And
more than my refrigerator.
That, yeah, you know that going in. That it's going to be basically your gaming machine plus a space heater all in one.
If I was running on solar power, I might care, right? Like, if I was strictly solar, like the super specific use case, it's Fallout has really happened in real life, and my only power source is the sun, and I'm going to only scavenge so many solar panels, right? And I barely have enough to survive. Or in a more realistic situation, I live a little bit further off grid. Right. And I have to build everything in eco mode because I'm watching how much power draw I've got throughout the house. But
in a gamer scenario,
you don't necessarily look at efficiency. What you do look at efficiency for is if you're doing workloads. And that's where the 9950X and the 9000 series efficiency actually is good at, is if you're putting these in machines that do work, like video rendering or 3D modeling or any of those, anything that's going to be CPU intensive, you're going to want to keep that efficiency, that efficiency number up, because, kilowatt hours is money, right? So, the more work you can get out of a machine for the least amount of electricity cost, you're going to have more profit margin, right? I don't care about that when I'm fucking trying to, frag fools.
Right.
not a damn, care in the world. So it was just marketed weird, and the performance is, if it didn't have to park the damn cores and it was something that was built in, like, a lot of the extra shit that you have to do is manual. You have to do it in command line. And if you don't know how to do that shit and you just picked up the product, put it in the machine, you would be disappointed with the results, because you're like, why is this slower than my last processor? You know?
Yeah.
It's just they kind of failed the initial launch. And the product that they put out, isn't living up to their hype. So, but then again, Intel's not doing much better anyway, because, their 13th and 14th gen processors are actually killing themselves. So there's that. They're literally burning themselves up. Slowly and over time. If you have a 13 or 14th gen processor, it has probably experienced, damage just because of the way that it was built. And yeah, there's microcode that quote unquote fixes it. But really all that microcode does is try to prevent any more damage from happening. It will not ever fix the damage that's already been done. So it's been a weird time for processors over the last year or two.
Yeah, still don't have a real solid reason to upgrade mine. So I would have got a 5950, I think's what I got right now. And
I'm really impressed with the 7800X3D, considering I picked up the Zen 5 board anticipating the 9000 series. It still has, I still had the compatibility to be able to go back to the 7800X3D with this board, and it's been a champ. That has outperformed my previous processor, easily, and I have not run into any issues with it. I might have an issue with my Windows install, but that's not the processor's problem. The Windows install, because I'm on Windows 11, and if you're on Windows 11, you probably understand this. But Windows 11 has a couple issues with specifically with AMD chips. There was a scheduler issue that they had fixed with a preview release, update to Windows 11. So I was able to download, like, I don't know, I want to say 15 to 20%, more processing power with it. So again, just a weird time for processors, these days. But we'll see how that works out in the future. Kind of geeked out a little bit there. So,
all right, you're all right. That's what this show's about. I don't really have anything else. Jason, do you?
Nope. I think we can go ahead and say that's it. So, guys, you can find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channels, youtube.com/tiltcast.com/shorts with a Z. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast. And you've got TVGP.TV. They're still going strong many years later. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right, guys. Peace.